Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. Thank God for a wonderful intern, because I did not want to have you guys hanging with the show. But we're going to go on with the show, even though the host is down, the host is down. But I'm going to do my best without confidence to the air. Now, again, I want to thank you for joining me, and I want to also thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning. Today's topic has to do with living with anxiety. Now, when it comes to mental health, many individuals are experiencing symptoms, yet struggle with obtaining help. This, however, can cause distress not only on the individual, but also on the family, including their children. It can affect individuals they work with or go to school with, and even individuals in the neighborhood. So today we're going to be talking about this topic, as we're going to be providing a lot of information, because many individuals are very confused when it comes to this subject and also other mental health related issues. So thank you for joining me today, and my guest, Amy. And if you want to call in and join in on the conversation, you can give us a call, 516-387-1914. So let me log on, Amy, so I can shut up.
Good morning.
Good morning, you, Amy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You sound great.
You know what? That's what happens when you take some halls with the cough drops and coffee and tea. And it's funny because this morning, well, yesterday when I got back after I left urgent care, I went to go have dinner with my other family because it was my sister from another mother's birthday. So I want to give a shout out to her and tell her happy birthday, and also tell my friend, also tell him happy birthday too. But this morning, girl, the first call I got was Ms. Parks calling me, telling me, baby, eat you some oatmeal. Don't forget your oatmeal. Girl, you should have saw me trying to get up this morning and making sure I heated me up some oatmeal. I took a picture of it and put it on Facebook just to let her know I was obedient and I did eat me some oatmeal this morning. So without further ado, Amy, tell the listeners who you are.
My name's Amy, and I'm Jeanette's intern. I'm getting my master's in social work currently. So I'm just shadowing Jeanette and letting her mentor me.
And I hope you're not picking up none of my bad habits. I hope nobody hear that from you with social work. So let's talk about anxiety. And this is one of those topics that's very interesting, because especially being in the field of mental health, whether you are an LCSW, MFT, LPCC, which are just some of the names, the titles that individuals have that operate in the field of mental health, a lot of times individuals struggle with symptoms. And being a therapist, Amy, you know, I get a lot of phone calls from individuals that are indicating that they have symptoms of anxiety and depression, panic attacks, and a lot of times they'll go on and on and on. And I used to wonder, how can you have anxiety and depression at the same time? And sometimes the symptoms do overlap. So today we're going to give you guys some information in regards to what are the symptoms, what can one do? Because, Amy, you know, not only do I receive phone calls in regards to adults having symptoms of anxieties, teenagers, and also I've been getting a lot of phone calls from parents about anxiety with their children. Some was, I want to say, maybe as young as 2-year-old, and I'm like, okay, how can a toddler or an infant be struggling with anxiety? So when we talk about that, I want to give you some of the common symptoms. And we know that anxiety can be a normal and stressful situation, because sometimes, you know, we used to think about public speaking or taking a test. And anxiety is not only an indicator of underlying diseases when feelings become excessive or consuming, it can interfere with daily living. Now, Amy, what do you want the listeners to know when we talk about how anxiety can and some of the other causes and symptoms that are out there?
I just thought this was an important topic to bring awareness to, because you do get so many frequent calls about anxiety, and I think everybody experiences anxiety at some point. Like, if my mom or anybody sends me a message, we need to talk. My heart drops in my stomach. even though I know I'm doing anything wrong, it's immediate anxiety, and I hand sweat, and I just anticipate that conversation. And then I get there, mom's like, oh, I just want to know if you like this outfit or something, or whatever it is. And then I'm just like, you could have just told me that, you know, but it's all in my own mind. I create these things that come up, and it creates this anxiety.
Correct.
So I just think it's not
and, you know, and with that, there's a common denominator. Now, I have some information. It talks about anxiety disorder, and it indicates it's a mental disorder characterized by feelings of worry, anxiety, or fear that are strong enough to interfere, like I said, with individuals' daily living. But I want to give you some of what they indicate as just some of the symptoms, to just give you some overview. The symptoms include, we know the anxiety, but excessive worry and irritability. Now, some individuals may have symptoms of what's called generalized anxiety disorders, and that could be severe ongoing anxiety that also interferes with daily living. But the symptoms include severe anxiety, excessive worry, and emotional distress. Then you have social anxiety disorder, which is a chronic mental health condition which includes social interactions and cause irrational anxiety. That includes symptoms of anxiety, palpitation, and fear. We have separation anxiety, this disorder in which a child becomes excessively anxious when separated from a parent, but individuals can also have relationship anxiety in adults when they separate from someone that they claim they love or they're dating to. And it can cause anxiety, crying, or apprehension. Then we have obsessive compulsive disorders. And these are the excessive thoughts, compulsions that lead to repetitive behaviors, compulsions. And these symptoms also include compulsive behaviors, anxiety, and compulsive hoarding. You know what, Amy, when you look at my garage, I might fall in that category. So, and we're leaving out panic attacks because individuals are not aware, but they can have a panic attack without having anxiety. Now, when you said that your mom will call you and tell you something, because I used to hate when my mother would do that to me, or give me a whooping on layaway. You know, it's like, when I get home, I'm going to beat your butt. Just do it. Why are you going to tell me? You know, and then you get home and you make me wait. So when we start talking about these things with anxiety, what can an individual do if they're living with anxiety?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you have to almost analyze what you're having anxiety for. Like for me, it's I don't want to disappoint. I'm a people pleaser. So when she says we want to talk, I think of all the worst case scenarios. Instead of going to the positive of things she wants to talk about or like, you know, something that's going to happen in the future, it's like all the negatives that I've ever done in my whole life that she may have just found out about or something. So that's like, that's for me is like you have to diagnose where it's from in order to overcome it. But even that, then, it's still like it still happens every time. It just isn't as awful every time.
And you know what, Amy? A lot of it is fear-based. It comes from fear. It comes from worrying. You know, it comes from, like you said, when you talk about being a people pleaser, and one of the things is if being a people pleaser is eliciting anxiety, you have to work, understand, too, are you pleasing yourself when you're doing that? Because even biblically, they talk about he who pleases everyone pleases no one, because you're not going to make everybody happy. You'll have people jumping through, you'll be jumping through hoops and loops and everything, and people will still not be happy. Now, we talk about just living with anxiety, and you know, and I tell people, and you get on me all the time, I do not have a friendly phone voice. So when individuals call me, the first thing I always want to know is which one of my five office locations you are inquiring about and what is a presenting issue. And I'm not going to call it an issue anymore. I'm going to say, what is your concern? Because a lot of times individuals don't know how to tell you what's going on. They just want to see a therapist or want someone to talk to. But a lot of times they wait till they get to the point of no return, or they wait till they get to the point to where they feel helpless and hopeless, and then they want someone to fix it or to tell them what they want to hear. And sometimes, Amy, that might not always be the proper response when it comes to that. What do you think would be a good way of individuals to, it's simple to tell the person what it is that they're dealing with?
I mean, just to go off what you said, I mean, like, anxiety starts to, if that's what they're calling about, you know, it starts to affect their whole life, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it affects them, their sleeping patterns. It can affect, you know, their hands start to sweat, and then it turns into, like, a social phobia. Just like you were saying, people do it to, like, the last minute, and mm-hmm. they don't realize it's okay to ask for help, you know? Like, anxiety is so broad. Like, you get calls, like you said, for, like, toddlers all the way till, you know, adulthood. Everybody's experiencing anxiety. I feel like every call you get has some sort of anxiety under baseline in there.
Correct. And then I have to make sure that I'm mindful and don't create more anxiety, because sometimes I'll be pissing them off. So I try not to answer the phone all the time. I just be giving you the phone. I'm sitting up here now. This phone has clicked about 4 times since I've been on the radio. So I have so many calls to call back. Now, we know that anxiety can be challenging to live with, but there are many effective ways to cope with it. You have to find the combination that works for you, because a lot of times individuals, they're being told, well, my friend is doing EMDR therapy, and I'll say, well, do you know what that is? No, but just because your friend is doing it doesn't mean that that may be effective for you. You have to be able to discuss what it is that you're dealing with. Like I said, do you have a family history of anxiety? Did something just happen recently in your life? Was there a change? You know, was there a breakup of a relationship? Was there you was presented with a new job opportunity, or may have lost the job? So a lot of times you have to get to the root of what it is that is going on and that is affecting individuals. Now, of all of the existing psychological and mental maladies, anxiety disorder are most common and affecting over 30% of adults in the United States. Amy, that's pretty high.
That is very high. A lot of it is how we handle our stress, too. Like our environmental stressors. Like, I think that stress in our life and how we manage it, and if we don't manage it, then it gets chaos, and then it creates anxiety within us.
That is true. And anxiety isn't all bad. Sometimes it can also be a lifesaver, and it's an evolutionary trait meant to protect us also from other forms of danger. And in a normal measure, anxiety is an alarm system, and it could be a motivator that push the need to finish sometimes a project on time, for us to meet a deadline, for us to get things done. So, you know, there's a lot of things where it's how we basically look at it. Now, when we start talking about just living with it, you know, not only with just regular individuals, do you know that in recent years that there's also an increasing number of celebrities and famous individuals that they have revealed their struggle with anxiety? Because a lot of times individuals look at other people and they think that they have it all together, and they don't realize what people go through. I was watching the news this morning, Amy, and they was talking about Justin Bieber. I didn't even know he was married, but apparently he's 25 years old, and he was talking about how, even being recently married, how he's struggling again with depression and was asking people to pray for him. And, you know, people are going to be reaching out to him and things of that nature. But we see a lot of that because you don't really know what a person is going through until you talk to them.
I mean, that's true. I did see his tweet that he posted. And even, like, there's tons of people reaching out, even if it's, like, substance abuse. And I think that's
mm-hmm.
a good example of, you know, like, they have this power, and we need to let people know that it's okay to ask for help. I mean, even
mm-hmm.
I don't even like to ask for help, and it's something I'm learning to do, because, you know, life is chaos sometimes, and it's easier. There's people around us for a reason, and they want to help, so let's let them help. People feel valued when they're asked.
That is true. You know, I was telling people that was texting me and asking me how I was doing, because I appreciated the concern, you know, because I was running around like a chick with my head cut off, and my pastor texted me and was telling me, slow down. I was like, OK, okay. But it was crazy because I went to Vegas, and who wants to be in bed at 6 o'clock in Vegas? Amy, you talking about somebody that was mad. I was fighting tooth and nails with Joanne when she kept trying to make me go to bed. I was like, I don't want to go to bed. I don't want to go to sleep. I don't want to, you know, but I knew I needed to rest, but I didn't know how to rest. My mind and my body kept telling me, I felt like R. Kelly when I was talking about my mind is telling me yes, but my body was telling me something totally different because my body wasn't having it. And I would put on Facebook how I went from Vegas to church to the urgent care to go have dinner and they ran lobster. I'm like, this is ridiculous. But we do have to learn how to, one, prioritize things, get our life in order, listen to our body, and take care of ourselves, not only physically, but mentally and spiritually. Because if we are grounded in those areas, Amy, that will help us a lot when it comes to living with anxiety or any other type of mental disorder.
Yeah, I mean, self-care is very important. Listening, like, you needed the rest and you wouldn't do it, so your body told you you're resting.
Yeah, it did that. It, girl, 6 o'clock, I'm going to be hit. I'm mad. She just looking at me like, whatever. She was like, go to bed. I'm like, I was literally, I had attitude. I really had attitude.
I told her, I didn't like, want to. I was like, take her phone. Just take it away. Put her on lockdown.
Oh, my God, it was horrible. And then the one night that I did try to go out, because a friend of mine told me to go to the Gold Coast and play this game, girl, when I went outside, that air hit my ears. Oh, my God, I couldn't hear. I felt deaf. My ears were killing me. I was like, that's what I get. That's just what I get. Because when you don't do what you're supposed to do, you go pay.
When you're dealing with anxiety, sometimes, like, it's important to diagnose it or analyze what you're having anxiety for, because sometimes it's fear-based, like you said, but from somebody else, like our parents. Like, I have a lot of kids that have anxiety of the water, and that's usually their parents aren't intentionally saying no, but they tell them, like, stay on the steps, you know, like, don't go off the steps. And then they go off the steps, and they get scared because they're disobeying their parents, and then they, you know, are close to drowning is what they think. And that's how they create an anxiety of the water. So it's all within ourselves.
Correct. And, you know, I want to give out some information for treatment with anxiety. When you talked about that, I wanted to tell you, I don't know if I ever told you my story with getting baptized, and I still don't have my baptism certificate because I told you I don't do water. And you always talking about swimming, and I know swimming is good exercising, but sister girl, I don't do the water. I don't, girl. And I guess one of these days my pastor will give me my baptism certificate because I did go down, but I went down cussing and fussing and everything up. And when I came up, I wind up hitting the other pastor. So, because I was scared to death, and I told him I don't do water. But that anxiety kicked in, that fear kicked in, girl, and I thought it was time to fight. Now, with anxiety treatment, the standard treatments for anxiety disorder are cognitive behavioral therapy, which is what they call CBT. And this is based on the idea that our thoughts cause our feelings and our behaviors, not external things like people, situations, and events. The benefit of this therapy is that we can change the way we think to feel and act better, even if the situation doesn't change. Now, CBT focuses on determining the thoughts and behavior patterns responsible for sustaining or causing the anxiety or panic attacks. Now, CBT is an older form, Amy, but it's still very effective. Another one is DBT. Now, that's dialectic behavioral therapy, and this form of cognitive behavior therapy is that emphasizes individual psychotherapy as well as group skill training to help people learn new skills and strategy, including mindfulness and distress tolerance to manage their panic attack and anxiety. Now, exposure therapy is a new one. And that's exposing patients to a safe and controlled environment to physical sensations they may experience in anxiety or panic attack. The idea is that by repeating the things that may trigger the panic attack, those triggers will eventually lose their power. And then we have medication. Now, a lot of times with medication, Amy, I had to tell a woman today, just because you take a pill, it's not going to change your situation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of times people, we want a one-time fix, you know, like to lose weight. People are like, oh, there's all these diet pills out there. Let's just take them. No, you actually have to eat right, you know, get some physical exercise. That's just how it works. There's not a one-time fix pill or everybody would want it. I think a lot of times anxiety gets misdiagnosed as like depression. Like you said, they kind of overlay like the symptoms. And so when we go to the doctor, doctors prescribe medication so easily. That's why it's so important to see a psychiatrist first or speak to a psychologist or a therapist, because then you can kind of work it out. And if it's not working then try and take the medication. But it's so easy to go get medications these days.
Correct.
And it's not helping. It's just adding more drugs into the world.
And you know what, Amy, and that is true, because I was looking at some of the medication when you start talking about Xanax and Ativan and a lot of those type of medication that's amphetamine-based. I remember when my mom was younger, I was alive, you know, they were Valium queens. They would, she'd be like, go to mama's house and go give me some pills. And I used to be on my bicycle and didn't realize that, first of all, that's illegal, and you can go to jail for taking other people's medication, and a lot of people don't realize that. And just like I was talking about Ms. Parks telling me to take some oatmeal, years ago people was quick to put stuck a pill down your throat, and that is true. And we have to learn how to manage and reduce our stress, and also to know how anxiety affects our bodies and our mind, because that's one of the things that we don't pay attention to. Now, there's a lot of information on the web, and NHI, and it's called Medline Plus, they offer a lot of information as it results to living with anxiety disorder, and they entitled it Worried Sick. And I like that topic because sometimes we just worry too much. And the bottom line is, and I always tell people, why are you worrying about things that you can't control? If you can't do nothing about it, some things we need to just let it go and move on to something else and learn to enjoy our life. Amy, what do you want the listeners to know when we're talking about worrying?
Well, I think worrying is, we all worry. Like, there's all things to worry about, but it's out of our control. And, like, we're still going to worry. Like, if our child is sick, you know, you have to wait for the medication to work, and it's going to, you know, you're going to worry, but it's financial. A lot of people worry about financial stress, financial worry. But if you have a job and you're worried about, you just have to be proactive, you know, like plan out your money, budget, and you're making the same amount of money, or be active and go get another job, or figure out areas in your house or in your life that you could minimize. You know, like I turn off every light, unplug everything because I want to lower my electric bill. And that's like something that I can control, and it's being active towards my financial worry.
And you know what, Amy, that's interesting you said that, even with that, because when you're talking about utilities, girl, I looked at my bills, my electricity bill be $100-something, and it was $100-something, and you know I don't hardly be at home. So some of that you can't control either. You could try your best to minimize certain things, but by that same token, we still have very little control over that, because we don't know what that number going to be when they send us that next doggone bill.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, like, when you start to worry, you know, you make yourself sick. That's the worry sick part.
Right.
When you stop eating, it's anxiety kicking in. You know, you have that knot in your stomach or that emptiness inside, and then you're not taking care of yourself.
Girl, the first time, because I've been responsible all my life. When my mom passed and I felt I didn't have to be responsible no more, girl, the first time I got my phone cut off, my daughter called me and was like, Mom, the phone ain't working. No, I think I called her. Girl, I laughed so hard. I was like, I done waited till I'm 40-something years old to forget to pay a phone bill and got the phone cut off. Now, I know you still like, Jeanette, when you going to pay this bill in Huntington Beach? I'm like, when I can. Sometimes I don't even get a chance now to even read the doggone mail. But before, I used to sit there at the first of the month, and it would drive me crazy. I used to be like, I got all these mortgages. I got these leases on these buildings. I got to pay payroll. I got this. But now I walk around like, whatever. Ain't nothing I can do about it. Now, this is some information, and it talks about 14 things only people with anxiety will understand. And it says, while many refuses to speak about it, because a lot of people don't even want to talk about it, living with anxiety is an immensely difficult feat. Now, the truth of the matter is that few non-sufferers even comprehend how this illness affects people. So I want to give you some information in regards to 14 things that people from anxiety know to be true. We know that anxiety does not define the person, because a lot of times we'll think, oh, here come Worry Betty, or they all they go do is complain. But we know that that's not who you are, but it could be a sign that you may have anxiety disorder. The effect of anxiety can be physical. Now, let's be clear. Even though anxiety is a mental disorder, it's not just something that just affects your mind. Anxious feelings can manifest physically, sometimes severely. For example, someone with anxiety may get uncontrollable panic attacks, headaches, dizziness, irregular heartbeats. And those are some of the things that most people, when they wind up going to the hospital, they wind up thinking they have a panic attack. Another one, 10 millions of adults suffer from anxiety in America, which we talked about a little bit. And, in fact, it's the most common mental illness in America. Now, just because a fear is irrational don't mean it's real. And, Amy, we're going to go back to that. And panic attacks are completely overwhelming. And if you have anxiety, you may also have depression. It is a may. It doesn't mean that you do. But in most cases, individuals be thinking that it kind of go hand in hand. And the most common time for anxiety attacks is 9 p.m. And it says, no, you just don't get over it, because sometimes people say get over it. That's not always the solution. The attacks of anxiety can come out of the blue, and not everyone with anxiety gets treatment. And it's not just a state of mind. So these are some of the things, and we're going to talk about some of the ways that individuals can manage it if you're not getting any help. And if you are getting some help and you found some things that are working for you, give us a call at 516-387-1914 and share what's working for you, because you never know how that may impact another person's life. Because I know before, Amy, I would always say, even if I had a cold, if I went to the casino, I'd feel better. But I guess it's just Paula, because Vegas, even though I did not do hardly any gambling because I wasn't in the mood because I was sick, and it just wasn't working. And when I saw people the way they was playing, I said, I'm not going to be giving away money, and I'm not going to waste my time. So that was far from what I was even thinking about. But, Amy, what are some of the other things? Because I said I wanted to go back to one of them when the most common time for anxiety attacks is 9 p.m. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the end of the day. You know, you've made it through the day. You've had a number of stressors out the day, and you get home and you're like, sit on the couch, and it just, it's like a wave that overcomes you. I think it's interesting. It's 9 p.m., but it also makes sense.
That is true, because that's when you're starting to lay it down, you're starting to unwind, and you're starting to have a reflection of basically how your day went. And that is so true.
Also, along with, like, you know, there's medications we talked about that should be more of a resort later in life, or later after you talk to somebody. But also there's, like, natural remedies. Like, chamomile tea is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lavender, there's this natural relaxant in that. And people, there's aromatherapy for a reason. These smells,
mm-hmm.
they can help. decrease anxiety and, you know, change your mood. And I know it makes a difference in the atmosphere of the office when we burn them. So there's other things to try before we resort to taking medication. There's also, like, magnesium. Sometimes our bodies are lacking some sort of vitamin. And so something so small can actually help relieve some of this anxiety that we're feeling. You said that you wanted to go back to something, panic attacks, I think?
Panic attacks, yes, because one of them was it being at 9 o'clock. No, it was part of it. I think it was part of it just it's not just a state of mind. And one of them was get over it. Because a lot of times we tell people, just get over it. And that's not always easy for a person to do. And I always tell individuals, even in therapy, we may not get over something, but we can get through it with the proper help. And a lot of times individuals don't like to hear the truth. You know, I've been doing some self-reflection, I guess because you had me do it. I was reading some of the reviews that individuals that have came into our office, so you got to help me find some of the other ones. But one of the things that I found is being honest with people. That helps because a lot of times individuals, they'll go to therapy and they'll say they want the help. But even though they may just want the people to a person to listen, but sometimes that don't even give them a great deal of relief sometimes because it brings up other thoughts. And then those thoughts become their behavior. They start acting them out, and they don't know what to do. And also, not everyone with anxiety gets treatment. A lot of times it takes somebody else telling that person, you need to get some help, or they give them an ultimatum. And they're going to therapy not because they want to, but because they're being forced to, because they don't think they have a problem.
I think, well, a lot of it, too, is when people come to us, you just lay it out for them, or we question them on, like, what's causing the anxiety. And sometimes that's all people need. Like, people come over, and they're like, oh, I'm so nervous for this, this, and this, or my boyfriend's going to cheat on me, or this. And we're like, well, why do you think that? You know, and you hear them out, and you almost let them work through it, which is very similar to CBT. But sometimes that's all people need is to overcome it, and then instead of saying, get over it, or that's not going to happen, like, listen. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest issue, is I forget to listen.
Correct. And you know what? And a lot of times, not only do we forget to listen, we hear it, but we don't want to hear it. I know over this weekend, because I was dealing with a whole lot of emotional stuff, and body aches and sickness and, you know, being with Joanne and listening to her try to tell me what to do and me being trying to be rebellious with her, which wasn't getting me nowhere. The only thing happened good was she tried to make me walk back to the car after we checked out the hotel. Girl, I was refusing to do that. I was standing my ground on that one. I had bruises all on my arms from carrying stuff. I was like, I can't do it. I'll just stand in front of the door and I'll meet you here. You know, I think that was the only battle I won. Everything else I pretty much lost. But the funny part was, what helped me get through a lot of what I was going through was having an old friend make me laugh. I laugh so hard over the weekend, just with the text messages, stuff he was sending me on Messenger, you know, it was just so funny. People don't realize that when you're in a mood like that, whether it's depression or anxiety, just having someone make you laugh can just make your day. And that
and be normal.
Hmm?
You know, like a lot of times, and be normal, be yourself. People
Correct.
That suffer from anxiety, we try and tiptoe around or try and say and do the right thing, and that's wrong. Just be yourself, because that will help pull them out of whatever they're feeling.
That is true. That is so, so true. So, again, if you're out there and someone is telling you, are they seeing different things? Because, again, the number of people getting regular treatment for anxiety is shockingly low when you consider the fact that it's the most common mental illness in the U.S. And in reality, only about one-third of people suffering get the treatment they so desperately need. And, I mean, Amy, a lot of times, even when I get those calls about kids, and I'm like, I was a child. But then when I'm talking to the parents, I don't want to say or put the blame on the parents, But sometimes I pick up on it, there's parenting styles that's basically contributing to what the child is going through. And that's why the child is so stressed out. Whether it's the parents are going through a divorce, whether it's domestic violence issues, whether they're being bullied at school, you know, there's a lot of different things that these kids are going through that they need someone to talk to and someone to connect with. And sometimes the parents feel that they don't know how to do it. And we need to get better with that, because we always think that individuals commit suicide just because they're depressed. Sometimes individuals can also commit suicide because with anxiety too, because they can become so anxious that they can start becoming out of control.
And I think, and it's also important to note that just if you find your child is doing self-harm, it's not necessarily to kill themselves. Not
correct.
Always. You know, like it's something that they can control because they feel like their life is unmanageable, which is very similar to anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Is when everything
is
so overwhelming.
We
always think, like, we assume that, you know, they're trying to kill themselves and they don't want to be here, but that's not always the case. So you need to listen and get them
mm-hmm.
help.
Yeah,
and
you know what,
other
individuals don't realize that with the self-harming, the self-mutilating behavior is a release of pain, but the self-mutilating behavior doesn't only have to be cutting themselves, tattooing. Look at all the adults that have all these body piercings and all these tattoos. That's addicting too. And when I looked at hoarding, you know, oh, my God, I was driving Joanne crazy. Every place we went to eat, I brought food back. I never ate all my food. I had a refrigerator full of food, and she made me throw away my oxtails. And you know I had been carrying them oxtails around for days. Oh, I was mad. She was like, you can get you another container. You can cook you some more oxtails. So now I got to purposely make sure I go today, buy me some more oxtails, and make me some oxtail soup. Because I was carrying them oxtails around, girl, ever since last Sunday. I was refusing not to throw my oxtails away. I had to leave them at the hotel. Now, one of the things with anxiety is changing negative thoughts to positive. One of the most powerful things a person in treatment for anxiety disorder can learn is how to change negative thoughts and behaviors. Now, we talked about that a little bit in regards to CBT therapy, but when a patient embraces the therapy, he or she learns how to take those strategies and keep using them long after treatment is over, because anxiety cannot simply be driven away by willpower, but the negative thoughts can be altered, because a lot of times when you talked about the worrying, the stressing, we always talk about the positive affirmations. If you tell me what you can't do, please tell me why you can't do it. Another thing, Amy, is using relaxation techniques. Now, you talked a little bit about the oils and the scents, but can you give the listeners some other things that they could do to develop or use relaxation techniques?
Breathe. We always forget to breathe, like just deep breaths, because that's when we fill our body with oxygen, our body will be happy. And that's like panic attacks, you get short on breath, and we forget to breathe. Yoga, that's why yoga is great. You don't even have to go to a yoga class. You can look it up on YouTube or buy a DVD or, you know, it's probably on TV these days. But there's a number of ways, you know, self-care, whatever you like to do. Whether it's sit on the beach or go to the casino, like it's self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but
and,
casino.
And if you mix them together.
I said casino can't be my self-care no more because they get on my nerves. I go there, the people get on my nerves. I enjoy the atmosphere. I enjoy the dealers. I enjoy the pit bosses. But, girl, some of the way people play, I was like, y'all going to make me catch a case up in here. So,
be proud of yourself when you ask for help, you know, whether it's for you or for your child or for a friend. Like, that's not necessarily something bad if you need help, you know, taking care of someone.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot for somebody to ask for help.
Why do you think that that's the case, Amy? Why do you think people struggle with asking for help? What do you think that's about?
I think it's expectations for ourselves or that other people set. Like, for me, being a people pleaser, I set these own expectations for myself. Like, my mom never, she always said, just as long as you did your best, it doesn't matter. Well, how come when I got a B, I cried? You know, it was these self expectations, and when I didn't reach them, I got really mad, and everyone else was so proud of me, like, you did so great, and I was like, no, I didn't. So, but like, why? You know, it's a passing grade. So I had to change my mindset. I had to find the positive or change it around and question myself is, why do I have these hopes? Or why do I have these expectations? And when I look back on it, it's because, I think it's because my parents were so focused on my brother and sister being sick. And I, when they were little, that I set these expectations, like, look at me, I'm getting an A, you know? And then when I didn't, I was super bummed out.
Wow. And you know what? And a lot of times that do happen. And some things are so rooted in childhood that we don't even realize that. And then what happens is we pass that on to our children, and we don't even learn how to heal ourselves before we start infecting somebody else with some of the worries and fear and anxiety that we have about things. Because when you talk to children, they talk just like their parents. They have the same, in most cases, same worries, because part of it is developing coping skills. And a lot of times that's where individuals struggle, is how are you going to handle this situation? One thing I could honestly say about my two adult children, my son has made a come around. When I thought he was at his lowest of his lowest of his lowest, my sister, my auntie told me, she said, Jeanette, he ain't that weak. He's smarter than that. And I was like, I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to drive myself crazy. But he did. He made a turnaround. My daughter, she get this point, figure it out. Just figure it out. She'd be like, if she do worry about something, you'll never know. Because she ain't going to give you no hint, no clue, no nothing. She walk around like a F the world. You know, but I know she has a caring spirit, but she don't carry that weight of worry. Now, we gave the listeners some information in regards to the importance of deep breathing, because it's also good, and also meditation, progressive muscle relaxation, and also autogenic relaxation, meaning imagining words, mantras, and suggestions, along with peaceful, relaxing images and awareness tension. Leaving the body helps create relaxation in a stressful situation, and visualization and guided imagery. I got this place I go to, Amy, when I go get my massage. Every time I go in there and go to sleep. It'd be so funny. When I took Miss Parks for my birthday last year, she said, baby, you said you was tired. Girl, they be in there working on my body. I'd be in there snoring. I'd be knocked out. Now, with reducing the anxiety, we have to learn how to make lifestyle changes and healthy habits, because once we get to learn and we develop the techniques, we have to learn how to use it. Now, healthy lifestyle habits and positive changes are more important in creating a life in which anxiety and stress are minimized. Some people find that making big changes are necessary to reduce stress. Amy, a lot of times we need to do that. Like you said, sometimes we got to walk away from jobs. Sometimes we got to let people walk out of our lives, or we got to walk out of people's lives in order to reduce our stress or anxiety, because sometimes it may not be them, it may be us. We do have to get what the trigger is. And when I said that some people find that making these big changes to reduce stress, for instance, like I said, a job, changing professions, unhealthy, stressful relationships, cutting ties with certain people can help, and smaller changes and healthy habits that promote a positive mindset with less anxiety includes eating a healthy diet. Girl, it's been a long time since this girl ate some oatmeal in the morning. And getting adequate exercise and maintaining a healthy weight, and avoiding smoking, alcohol, and drugs. Getting enough high-quality sleep. We're going to go back to that one, Amy. And spending time doing enjoyable and relaxing things, taking time to be alone and reflective, and being more socially engaged. Amy, a lot of times individuals will battle you when it comes to getting enough sleep, but they indicate quality sleep. You can sleep 8 hours a day and still feel restless. What do you think the difference is between quality and quantity? What can individuals do to get more quality sleep?
to leave work at the office, to leave the worries at the door, it's like self-care, you know, like you worrying about work. We talked about this in the domestic violence group, and one of the guys was saying that brings his work home and he lays in bed and he just like anticipates work. And then I was like, well, what do you, you can't do work at home. And he's like, I know. And I was like, then why worry about it? Just like you said,
mm-hmm.
if it's out of your control, why worry about it? It's like financial stress. You're not going to make money going to sleep. And the only way you're going to make money is if you have a good night's sleep and you're, you know, productive at work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, and I have to go off what you said, like setting little goals for yourself. You know, like there's that thing that went around a couple of years ago about why making your bed every morning is very important. And it's, you know, it gives you that feeling of accomplishment. It's gives you a, like, you know, it feels so good to pull those sheets back after a fresh made bed at night. And that's like something small that you can do that starts your day off like, wow, that's something I accomplished today. I made my bed,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you can go on to make good breakfast. And I can't, like, I can't leave my room without making my bed now. It's just become a habit.
Mm. Good job. Good job. Well, you will be so proud of me, Amy, because this morning I made my bed. I fold them clothes up on my bed. I said I can't use them for my heater anymore. So I'm working on that. I came back with a new attitude, so I got a whole lot of stuff I have to do. And Jeanette, go do it. I'm going to do
it. Yeah, setting lists, you know, like making lists that you get to cross off. That's how I get, when I get so overwhelmed, I have to make a list. Homework
mm-hmm.
assignments and stuff I got to get done. And, yeah, like we said, like breathing. Breathing, it fuels your organs. And that's what's
mm-hmm.
going to get you through the day. We don't realize we need oxygen.
Gotcha.
And our body does it automatically, but sometimes we need extra.
Mm-hmm. You know, Amy, I want to give the listeners, I haven't checked my social media because I haven't put a lot of the information out. So some individuals that may be listening to the show may have to catch it on demand because I didn't get the opportunity to post a lot of stuff because I was trying to get, I want to say, quality sleep today because I didn't want to be all toe up, but my voice I know is coming in and out. And but I want to give the listeners some information in regards to parents because as parents and caregivers, don't let the possibility alarm you once you seek help and, if appropriately, receive a diagnosis that your child may really have anxiety, because a lot of times individual parents don't know what to do because there are a certain amount of anxiety that is a normal part of a child's healthy development, like brief separation, anxiety and fear of the dark, strangers, loud noise, storms. Those are just to name a few. It's funny because one of the things about Ryder got a bad habit of calling me every day. And if he don't call me, he FaceTime me. Granny. So I think today I'm going to go surprise him because I haven't seen him in a couple of days. So I got to go see Mr. Ryder so he can get on my nerves for a little while. But if your child starts to experience anxiety more constantly across a range of other topics of the areas in their life, that such around school, friends, family, health, and sports, it may be time to figure out if your child is suffering from anxiety because, like I said, don't let it alarm you. Because you want to make sure you get your child the help that they need. Because approximately 5% to 10% of children, they experience generalized anxiety. And among children with ADHD, the rate appears to even be higher. And as with adults who experience generalized anxiety disorder, females are twice as likely as their male peers to be diagnosed with generalized anxiety. Now, we know with children, like I said, it could be very excessive, over the top. It could be unrealistic in regards to they worry about what they worry about. They often even anticipate disasters or worst-case scenarios, and they may also experience restlessness, difficulty concentrating, irritability, muscle tensions, fatigue, difficulty swallowing, a need for frequent urination, stomach aches, and sleep disturbances. So have your child seen by someone. There's certain tools that they can give them. You also want to find out in regards to if it's including if there's a genetic disposition, the family dynamics, life experiences, and neurobiological factors. And a lot of times parents don't want to share that information because they want you to fix the kid. But if you don't work with the whole family, sometimes that don't help with the problem. What are your thoughts on that, Amy?
Yeah, I think, well, like when you call and somebody, or when not when you call, when someone calls you and they, you ask them what's going on in the child's life, because you get a lot of children phone calls, and they're like, nothing, I don't know. And there's got to be something. Kids don't just all of a sudden get anxiety. And you'll notice other signs, like they might have a little bit of OCD, you know, like controlling when they go to the bathroom or when they eat. And you have to realize some of that's normal. They're going to control certain things because they're children, and they're going to push your buttons. But if you see other signs, it's okay to ask for help or just get a second opinion.
Correct. And, you know, one of the things that I do, Amy, and I know sometimes I may sound as if I'm interrogating, which I'm not. I'm just trying to find out if you and I can help these families by asking these questions. And I notice that some parents become very defensive. Some are open to it. But what I do in a lot of cases now, I just send them the information and links to the radio shows. And then that way they can hear my style. They can hear that I do care. And I am trying to help. I'm not trying to blame, because I would prefer working with the whole family, because I always pick up even on what they don't tell me. I pick up on that too. But then also, like I said, when we're talking about when there's issues of divorce, separation, when there's financial struggles in the home, kids pick up on that. Now, when we talk about with prescription medication, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are referred to as what they call SSRIs, tend to be more commonly prescribed medications prescribed for children and adolescents with anxiety. They include Prozac, Celexa, Zoloft, and Lexapro. As with all medications, prescriptions used to treat anxieties have risk. They are prescribed, however, and when a physician or psychiatrist believes the benefits of the medication outweigh those risks. But talk, get a second opinion, do your research. Don't just put your babies on no pills. And it's not that I'm against medication, because some people do need medication in order to balance themselves out. But coping skills. There are a variety of coping techniques that children and teens can use to help ease the uncomfortable symptoms of anxiety socially, behaviorally, and emotionally. Learning what works well for your child is key. You may want to suggest that some of the following ideas and allow your child, depending on the age, to choose which one they would like to do first. And let them know that it's a time to explore and that works for them. And if a technique doesn't seem to be helping them, try something else. But slowing down, you got to, you know, teach them how to slow down. Social connection, getting them connected with other people help. Self-care. Self-care is not only important for adults, Amy, it's also important for teenagers and children. And a lot of times teenagers don't take care of themselves. By sleep routines, eating habits, physical activities all contribute to your child's well-being. Your child might struggle in certain areas like sleep or physical activity, especially if they experience restlessness, muscle tension, or fatigue. But you might want to help them plan or create a self-care plan and be there for them to help them. And sometimes, Amy, connecting with your child and doing things with your child. What do you think about that idea?
I think a lot of times they forget to do things, or they don't listen to what their children like. Oftentimes they want to do what they want to do, you know, like, or what you enjoy, and you're not listening to what they enjoy. Sometimes kids get forced to play sports or musical activities. But extracurriculars are really important for children to find out what they like and what they don't like and to relieve stress. That's why, like, physical activity, it releases, you know, it's a good, it releases dopamine, which is a happy chemical. It makes us feel good. That's why they encourage you 30 minutes of exercise. And with technology, our posture gets bad, and we're hovering over computers or phones. And just so if we lead by example.
Correct. You know what we did talk about, Amy, is individuals in college, because individuals first year of college creates a high level of anxiety. Individuals giving childbirth, becoming a new parent, relocating to another city or state, getting a new job, losing a job, a lot of that creates a lot of retirement. That's a whole other issue. Change of life, when individuals start aging, their anxiety increases too, because sometimes they're so afraid of death till they stop living, when that's the time to really start living. So those are some of the things, just to name a few. So, Amy, what else do you want the listeners to know as we're talking about this topic of living with anxiety?
I think that, to go off of what you said about college, I think actually, I just lost my train of thought. It will come back to me. But to go off of the living with anxiety, to talk about it. Let it be known that you're struggling with something or you have these worries, because there are people around you that care for you, and there are people that can help you. And oftentimes we do have a lot of people that come in with anxiety, and not everybody, but it only takes a couple sessions to, you know, feel better. Like, people come in and they're like, oh, I'm done with therapy. And then they end up coming back because there's other issues, but it's great because they've overcome one thing in their life. And it makes us feel great because we want to help.
It's been funny, Amy, and you know what? For some reason, I don't know what's going on in the area of Huntington Beach, but I'm getting a lot of Huntington Beach calls. My godbrother keep telling me to change my schedule, so I'm going to have to sit down with you, and we're going to have to go through some things and figure some things out. But, I'm getting a lot of calls for the Huntington Beach area. Now, I want to share some information, and it talks about, and I found this on psych.com, and it talks about the lies that my anxiety tell me, because a lot of times when we're talking about any type of mental health illness or wellness, you know, we have this thing where we think we're never going to be get over it. It's going to consume us. But an irrational response, the painful, slow process of surrendering can make it actually even worse. Now, these are some of the lies that they indicate that people even say to themselves as they're battling with this. I'm extremely anxious right now, and I can't stop it. My life is horrible. I can't stand this feeling. I'm going to feel like this forever. I'll never be happy again. I'm a failure. Everyone else has their life together. I'm going to mess up my life if I make the wrong decision. No one likes me. They're all just pretending. My anxiety makes me unlovable. And this time of anxiety is never going to go away. So those are some things that are not true. And like I said, you can call 211. You can also, if you have insurance, you can contact your insurance provider and have them connect you with a licensed professional. There are life coaches out there. You can go to or log on to Psychology Today and connect with a therapist in your area. If you are a college student and you're suffering or you're dealing with anxiety, I tell individuals, too, that the individuals on the college campuses, many of them are master level or licensed individuals, so they're not just all students, that could also offer you professional help and provide resources within a community if necessary. You can obtain past. And that's just to name a few. And if you want to contact me, you can contact myself. My name is Jeanette Abney. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist with 5 different locations. I'm also the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, located in Orange County with offices in Fullerton, Garden Grove, and Huntington Beach. I'm also the owner of J.A. Precious, Inc., located in Oceanside, with the office in Oceanside, and I have a satellite city of Marietta. Amy, what do you want them to know about you as we're about to end this show?
I am in the process of getting my master's and hopefully receiving my license. I think that people just need to speak out, reach out. You know, celebrities are doing it a lot more. You can too. And if you're not comfortable speaking to a therapist yet, talk to a friend. You know, just let them know what's going on, and then let them encourage you to go speak to someone.
Got you. And I want to let the listeners know this because I attended that SAP training. Don't use dope to cope, because getting high, drinking, engaging in risky sexual behaviors, that don't make your situation go away. It actually make it worse, because bitches are losing their jobs, they're losing their lives, they're overdosing because the person will say, come on, let's get high, or I know it can make you feel better. Don't fall for that, so don't use dope to cope. So I want to thank you for joining me and Amy here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. And until next week, remember, you got this. We'll come up with the topic. And for tomorrow, I will be on the air with Pastor Dan Estelle from Higher Dominion Worship Center. And I want to talk about don't pick your rib. When we're talking about being matched or connected with someone, and they talked about Adam and Eve and how the rib came from the man and was given to the woman. So we're going to talk about that. Because when we talk about relationships, we got individuals walking around talking about, do you got my rib? So it's going to be interesting. That's going to be a good one. You might want to call it on that one too, Amy. So until tomorrow, you can log on and join us again at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. As we're going to be talking about, don't pick your own rib. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.